Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Man, did I feel like an idiot, and then I felt like the smartest man on earth. Huh? That's how it works in sports radio. Told you the Bolts are pretty good. The Chargers come from down 14 two different times in the fourth quarter to steal a win in Kansas City, and that's where we begin. Full disclosure, okay? Full disclosure. The way it works in Southern California, and look, I had the choice. I probably could have moved right down the street. Our studios are in a really nice area. It's just not an area that I've ever lived in before I grew up. So I live closer to where I grew up, closer to my mom and my friends. So it takes between an hour and an hour and a half to get home, depending upon the day and time of day, usually. The same is true, I think, for our entire crew. Dan Beyer works a little bit longer. Same too with John Ramos and with Ryan Music. And we had some sort of Christmas holiday soiree down the street, which I had like a drink and a half and then hopped in my car because my daughter had a garage band concert. We do a basketball workout and I got the game to pay attention to. So I listened to the game for the most part and then watched the game on my phone and then watched the end at my house. Ramos, how much you were at you came to the soiree. So too did Beyer. So too did Music. We're the only show unit in its entirety to show up. That's just because we're better than other people.
And there you go.
And because it's right down the street and there's free booze. did you watch the entire game? Did you watch it? I know Music had two parties to go to and then taped it, watched it, fell asleep, woke up, watched it again. How did you watch the game?
I actually did what you did on the way home. I listened to it on the radio, shockingly enough, yes, with our good friend Matt Money Smith, who calls the games for the Chargers Radio Network.
And yep. Daniel Jeremiah, and who's Daniel our good Jeremiah, friend who joins yep. the show. Okay. And then Beyer, how did you, and by the way, yep. Dan Beyer's show is Sunday mornings, 9 Eastern, 6 o'clock in the morning Pacific time. Getting you ready. Huge weekend fantasy football. Of course, you have that game and two other Saturday games in the bank. So your fantasy playoff will be well underway. Dan, how'd you watch or listen to the show?
One of the benefits of LA traffic is that you could put the game on your phone. And I watched the first quarter while sitting in traffic on the way home and then saw the final three quarters from my house.
All right. Stick with us, Dan. I know you're busy. If you have to go, let me know.
No, I'm good.
And then Music, you watched. So let me start with you, Beyer. If I had to say, what's your takeaway from the game? What is it?
That in the time that they needed it the most, the Chiefs defense was what they were. And that Kansas City, I'll just leave it at that. Just the Chiefs defense was what we thought they were.
Okay. What about you, Music? What would you be your takeaway?
Very similar to Dan's, that in the early parts of the NFL season, everyone, especially after that Rams-Chiefs game of a few weeks ago, this is the new NFL, you got to score 35 points a game, it's all about offensive shootouts, but my takeaway was the Chiefs will not be a team that will make a deep playoff run if their defense continues to let them down when they match up against other talented teams.
Okay. Ramos, are you going to just agree with them?
No. That's easy to do? I am not. My takeaway would be that Phillip Rivers came through in the clutch. That he's
He did have, there's a little Tebow aspect to him. Yep. We used to make fun of Tebow getting credit for putting out a fire he started. I mean, the first throw of the game, he had Tyrell Williams wide open. He underthrows it. And, I mean, the last thing you want to do is, start out down 14 to nothing, which is exactly what happened. He threw another interception at the end of the half that could have tied up the game. Like he could, I felt like he had some good throws in the first half, but I didn't think he played particularly well at all. And yet late in the game, he made so many throws, including that fourth down throw, which everyone's raving about, where Williams wasn't even looking and hadn't even, you know, started his break yet when Philip, kind of an anticipatory throw, a lot like Peyton Manning late in his career, threw it before the break and ends up getting that fourth down. Look, I think there's a bunch to it. You know, let me just kind of go through my takeaways. One, I don't think the Chiefs are what they were a couple of weeks ago. And I think a good part of it is, even though they've established they have a really good depth of running backs, you lose your starter, you're not going to be as good. And remember, I'm not a big Sammy Watkins guy, but you lose Sammy Watkins and you're not going to be as good. Considering they're at home, considering how they dominated the first half with their screen game and with hard counts, Pat Mahomes was, I mean, his escapability was remarkable. People are, you know, it's Mahomes magic. To be up 14 the first half and to not win that game. Forget about the fourth quarter, because we've seen fourth quarter comebacks before. And then, yes, is their defense bad or disappointing? Sure. And now, you know, one of their best defensive backs who had an interception last night ends up breaking his wrist and has surgery today. Like, it feels like it's getting bad or even getting worse, even with Eric Berry back. But I do think there's something to the fact that they had a three and out when it was a 7-point game. They could not, you know, they could not stay on the football field. There were a couple other opportunities. There was another time when Andy Reid chose to punt. And I think that was after a kick return to like the 50-yard line, and they're 10 of 11 on fourth down, and the Chargers have really struggled to get off the field on fourth down. So there is something to the Chiefs are in postseason form when they have a lead and can't hold on to it. And is their defense an issue? Absolutely. Is Ryan Music correct in the adage of defense winning championships couldn't have been rung more true in the Chargers defense that couldn't put any pressure on Mahomes early, but he started to hit him late in the first half, early in the second half, and made some big plays to get the ball back. But there is something a little bit missing about that offense that I think is not going to be pointed out. Do I think Mahomes is going to take too many chances and that's going to get him? Yeah, I think there's a possibility of that. And I also think that the Chargers are a team that if they win out, I don't know if the Chiefs are going to win in Seattle. They could have home field advantage throughout, and they're going to be better. They're going to have Melvin Gordon. They're going to have Austin Eckler. And I think they're going to have Hunter Henry for the playoffs. That's crazy. Crazy. So, but whereas the Chiefs, some through, you know, you have to get rid of your best running back. And that's not something that was preventable or anybody could have seen happening. But you lose Kareem Hunt and you're not the same running the football. That has allowed you to be different in terms of what happens when you have a lead. But they couldn't get a first down late when they needed it. So we can talk about their defense all we want, but the offense left a lot to be desired in that they weren't able to be nearly as dominant in the second half. When you have a lead and you're playing at home, you got to stay on the field and keep that defense off the football field and make it so that the Chargers can't run the football. So they have to throw it. So your defensive line, which dominated the good first half of the game, that's really, I mean, the story of the first half was not as much Mahomes. It was the defensive line of the Kansas City Chiefs and how well they played. I mean, dude, Chris Jones has 14 sacks on the year. How many people, Beyer, you know the NFL, you cover the NFL, you do a fantasy show, and granted, we pick defense and special teams, and nobody would pick the defense of the Kansas City Chiefs. How many people outside of Kansas City could pick Chris Jones, would say, if you said, Chris Jones, what does he do in the NFL, would say he might be the best defensive end in the league this year?
I would say he's a great third down back for pick a team. Nobody really would.
Yeah.
Usually you hear Justin Houston, and that like encompasses everything.
Maybe D Ford, only because his name is D.
Yeah, maybe, but I think it's more of, you may hear Derek Johnson before you would hear D Ford.
You did.
Chris
you
Jones.
Did. No one said, can they block Chris Jones yesterday?
Nope.
No one said, can they block Chris Jones? And he was an absolute monster. I mean, a monster. How about Justin Houston only has 6.5 sacks this year? 43 yards loss, though. But Chris Jones has 14 sacks on the year. So, look, my takeaway, do I think their defense is good? No, I think their defense stinks. I think their linebackers are awful in coverage. Matter of fact, it looked like Derek Johnson was on the field because none of their linebackers were covering. And this is also a team that's playing without their starting running back who will expose a linebacker and without their starting tight end who will expose a linebacker. That's how bad their linebackers are. But I also think that the offense couldn't get a first down when it got the ball back up a touchdown and quiet is kept. Like, that is a huge, huge issue heading forward. What a story, though. What a story. I mean, how good is Phillip Rivers after the game? He gets up there and then to point out that he didn't think they were going for two and they just decided to go for two. Take a listen to Phillip Rivers after the game.
I was going to the sideline, going to overtime. And Coach Land said, let's go win it right now. Let's go for two. Let's go win it right now. And when he said that, there was so much conviction from him. It was, yeah. Let's go win it right now. I mean, it was immediately turn around, let's go win it. I mean, and if we didn't win it, we didn't win it. But I think his conviction, it wasn't like, should we? It wasn't. It was, no, let's go win the game.
Look, I think this going to win the game thing is like the flu. Like, everybody's kind of got it, and everybody's feeling like, oh, yeah, I have a little bit of the flu. I got to go for it. But I didn't love it. And then all of a sudden they run apparently the same play they ran for a Mike Williams touchdown, and he was wide open. I think that's why people are more on the defense. It's not that you got beat. It's not that Phillip Rivers came back and lit you up. You know, it's Phillip Rivers, and they do, but it's they didn't have Keenan Allen. They didn't have Hunter Henry. They didn't have Melvin Gordon. And on the very last two, like, who scores a two-point conversion where there's no one within 15 yards of you? I have never seen that ever before. And it wasn't a trick play. Just a missed assignment at the worst possible opportunity. And how crazy would it be if the Chargers, who have struggled, and I am the only Charger fan in the history of national sports radio, if the Chargers have home field advantage. Everybody do the fingers thing, the finger quote thing. Home field advantage, playing at StubHub. 27,000 seat, it's a great place. Going to try and rally the boys to go in next Saturday night and see Lamar Jackson and the Ravens come in town.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's welcome in Eric Mangini, the former head coach of the Browns, former head coach of the Jets, our head coach here at Fox Sports Radio and Fox Sports One. Eric, how much more buy-in is there after watching the Chargers come from behind on the road in those two environments?
Well, look, it's so a difference the two-point conversion makes, because I'm sure that it would be dramatically different had that failed. I can see why people have some concerns. You look at what happened against the Steelers, and they didn't play well at all in the first half, and they make a great comeback. And that's you respect that, and you respect their ability to do those things. But sometimes the magic dust runs out, and it often runs out in the playoffs. So if you are going to dig yourself into holes, yeah, it's fantastic that you can dig yourself out. Yeah. But why are you getting in those places in the first place? And I think that's where I've had trouble buying in, is at some point you're not going to be able to create these comebacks and the other shoe falls.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, you don't have Melvin Gordon, either of those two, and he may not be their best player, but he's in the conversation there. All right, let's get to the other side. What's your level of concern with the Chiefs, who, you know, kind of the opposite, right? They're able to get a big lead. They're able to put up points, but not able to hold on and manage that lead.
Yeah, look, I've had a level of concern for a while, and like everybody, I'm impressed by a lot of things that Patrick Mahomes does, but you learn about young quarterbacks during the course of the season, and defensive coordinators learn about young quarterbacks during the course of the season, and people start to understand how you have to play those teams, and part of this is in those big moments, you'd like to see him to continue to make plays in the big games that he's had, to be able to come out with wins, whether it's New England or last night, and maybe I'm being too hard on them at this point, but there does have to be a collective effort on behalf of Kansas City to protect that defense. The defense is obviously behind where the offense is, and you've got to play complementary football. You've got to understand that when you've got those leads now, what can we do to make sure we protect these leads?
Yeah. I mean, like, look, as much as the defense gave up those last two touchdowns and a two-point conversion where Mike Williams is wide open, it wasn't like they got an onside kick. Kansas City couldn't hold on to the football, you know, couldn't play add-on, couldn't get 3 points at home with this prolific offense when they needed it most. Fair?
It's absolutely fair. And you know what your weaknesses are as a team. And you realize that there's going to be a lot of games where you do have those leads. And you've got to look at it in terms of how can we best protect this. And some teams take the approach that we're just going to continue doing what we do because that's what created the success in the first place. And then other people have a very specific plan in place to make sure that they transition into a ball control mentality. And both have worked for guys, but it's going to be an issue for Kansas City moving forward.
Was it a smart move? I know we so often judge the result, and if you can run a two-point play where Mike Williams is wide open the end zone, I guess, you know, it's a smart move. But in reality, when you dominate time of possession and, you know, the defense is on the field 33 minutes, I know you're on the road. Was it a smart move for the Chargers to go for two?
It's so funny because you look at Dallas's situation where they get the ball in overtime, they go on the field and score. And you think, man, maybe they should have gone for two in that game. Or you look at Tennessee when they went for two and they didn't make it, and
against
that
the Chargers,
could have dramatic effects on
right.
Yeah, it could have dramatic effect against for their playoff opportunities. And so it ends up being a result based evaluation. But I understand why. If they lose the toss and Kansas City gets the ball back, they could be very easily in the situation that we saw in the Dallas game last week where they never get a chance to possess it and they go home wishing that they had gone for two. So I like the call. I liked how definitive he was about the call. It sounds like there wasn't any debate. There wasn't any indecision in his mind. Obviously, the play worked out great, but you know, rarely do you have a guy running free in that situation. But it makes sense against that offense.
Crazy, crazy stuff. And what even crazier is that the Chargers could end up with the same record as the Kansas City Chiefs and yet only host a wild card game, and then go on the road either to New England or go on the road to Kansas City in the second round. Let's get to New England. Here's one where, based upon the result, you'd think, oh man, they lost that game. Now you have to win in Pittsburgh. If you gave me a status report on the Patriots, what would it be?
It would be status quo. And that's the thing about being in New England and different than a lot of teams. Whether you win big, whether you lose big, whether you win close or lose close, it's an evaluation of what happened, what you can take away, and then it's moving on to the next opponent. And you're not getting caught up with, you know, we could be the home team, we could be the away team, we could have to do this, we could have to do that. Nobody talks in those terms. And one of the things that Bill does so well is maintaining that focus. And it's an art. It's really difficult because there's so much noise happening outside. It's the media, it's your family, it's the fans, it's everywhere. It's talking about the what ifs. But when you're in that building, it's only about what's next. And it really gets down to, Doug, where it's, what's the next meeting? What's the next activity, whether it's lifting or whatever the case may be? It's that sort of defined approach that gives them the best chance to succeed and doesn't put them on an emotional roller coaster. When
you
lose a draw, you're getting the same thing.
Why have they done so well against the Steelers?
Because there's a formula that's in place in terms of the way that they play Ben, and then they really work hard to not allow him to get out of the pocket, because with Ben Roethlisberger, broken plays equal big plays, and you see it every single year. He does it to everybody. New England's historically done a really good job of keeping him in the pocket, and the flip side of that is when he is in the pocket, he will hold the ball a long time, which creates tons of opportunities for sacks and turnovers. So that's been very good. The second thing is they're gonna define who can hurt them, and they're gonna take away the two biggest threats and force you to win with the third threat or play left-handed. So that's the flip side of that. And then offensively, for a long time, for a lot of years, Pittsburgh played one defensive philosophy, and it was very good, and it had variations, but it was one philosophy. So Tom was very good at recognizing that and Bill and putting together a scheme that beat it, and they've evolved somewhat, but it's the same head coach, it's the same quarterback, it's the same coordinator, and when they have that type of information on a defense, they're hard to beat.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, this is layman's terms, okay? This is for us civilians, not for you professionals. Isn't it just, look, their linebackers are bad in coverage. They're designed to stop the run. They like the blitz, but basically, you know, you find the linebacker in coverage, and that's who you attack. Is that too simplistic?
I think there are elements of that. They're going to find the weak link, and they're going to attack it. Yeah, that's true. But it's also understanding what the coverage is. So if you come out and it's cover three, which means you have a soft corner, Tom has the ability, or it's not ability, because all quarterbacks have the ability to throw the hitch. Tom has the patience to be able to take what's there. And not a lot of guys can do that. They're too ego-driven, or they feel like they've got to push the ball to a star. Tom will take what you give him, and it just adds up collectively. And so if it is the linebackers that they can exploit, then they'll work the linebackers. But there's things defensively that you can do to hide linebackers. I think Pittsburgh really has to try to give them things that they haven't seen before. You've got to give them things to where they're reacting to you instead of you always reacting to them.
Why do you think Pittsburgh has struggled so much recently?
Well, it's been a combination of things. You know, different families approach things different ways, and I've always talked about this with Pittsburgh. Very rarely do they go through a season without there being some sort of either internal discord or issue that they're facing in related to the off season, and they do go up and down. But Pittsburgh was coming off a 6-game winning streak not too long ago. And before that, we were wondering, you know, why has Pittsburgh struggled so much this year? I think it's been a combination of things. And the one thing I know about Pittsburgh, though, is you can't ever count them out, because they always seem to find a way to end up in the playoffs.
Yeah. My concerns, though, this year is now you have no running game, and now you're looking for a new kicker at this point in time in the season. Like, I'm with you. They always find a way to get in there, and they've been there so many times that you don't want to play in the playoffs. It does feel like this might be a different year. How long will it take the Ravens to be exploited for their inability to play on third and long, for the inability to read a defense? How long does it take the league to catch up to what Lamar Jackson is able to do?
It depends how much they're going to continue to use him in the running game, how willing they're going to continue, or how willing they are to put him at risk with the quarterback-driven runs to make him a primary ball carrier. And you know, when we had Colin initially in San Francisco, or when Colin came on the scene, that's what he did, and he did really well and hard to deal with, and he was able to throw the ball at a level that was different than a lot of those wildcat-type quarterbacks. So he was a significant threat. As that got dialed down, and that threat was dialed down, it became a little bit harder to really accentuate the positives he had. So it's going to depend on Lamar, too. Can he develop that second pitch? Can he get to the point where he's aggressively reading coverages and making progress? Because if that stagnates and he becomes your starting quarterback, there's only a matter of time before he gets hurt when you're on the ball as much as he is.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Eric Mangini, two-time head coach in the National Football League, our guest. Of course, you can see him on Fox Sports 1. Are you a buyer into the new-look Dallas Cowboys?
I'm a reluctant buyer. I love the things that they've done. And I like the fact that they've made Amari Cooper the threat that he is, and I think that really helps Zeke. I also like the use of the tight ends that I've seen. It's just there's been so much emphasis on, we got to play this game like it's a Super Bowl. We got to play this like a playoff game. You get worried that emotion at some point is going to run out, or if they do get in the playoffs, that they're going to be exhausted by the time they get there. And that, to me, is, as we talked about in New England, that's a big difference. You can run on emotion and for a while, but it gets to the point where you get a little bit exhausted. I do like the progress that they've made offensively, and I do like the fact that they can now threaten down the field in the passing game. It's just hard. I'm having a hard time completely buying in.
The Raiders seem to be tanking, shedding assets, and they've collected a bunch of first-round picks. I think the media and the press, there's a lot of negativity. Like, oh, hey, they give away Khalil Mack. It's two first-round picks. They give away Amari Cooper. It's a first-round pick. Considering they weren't very good with those guys, obviously you're running the risk if you miss on draft picks, but if you draft well, I like the plan. How do you react to what you're seeing in Oakland?
Well, it's a long-term vision, and it's not just the draft picks, Doug. It's the money.
Yep.
And people forget that. People forget how expensive those two assets would be, because if you re-sign Amari Cooper, that's a very expensive asset. So you have the same player for a much higher price, and the same thing with Khalil Mack. Now, if you're going to get younger players, assuming that you hit on the draft pick, for 5 years at a very reasonable rate, and now you can take that money that you saved and put that towards free agency. So you've created a lot of different avenues to improve the team. And sometimes guys don't fit with the head coach's scheme. And the one thing we do know about Oakland is that John Gruden's been there for a long time. So to be able to do this in year one, it may be uncomfortable. It may be not what anybody really wanted in Oakland. But you are putting yourself in a position, ideally, for long-term success, because you've got young players on five-year contracts at very reasonable rates. You can go out, ideally, and get, you know, free agents that work for you, and that is a chance to compete for the long term.
Eric Mangini, former head coach, NFL analyst for Fox. Eric, great stuff, man. Happy holidays to your family. Appreciate you being our guest.
Thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, that's my pleasure, as always.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
You know, the Steelers-Patriot game is interesting because it does feel like the Patriots always find a way to beat the Steelers, doesn't it? Like, that's just what, first, it feels like they play each other every year. And then it feels like the Patriots always win. Matter of fact, go back and look when the Steelers won the Super Bowl both times. Guess who they did not come upon? Wait for it. It's the Patriots. So I find this thing fascinating. I asked Eric Mangini, former Patriots assistant, Jets head coach, Browns head coach, why the Patriots always seem to beat the Steelers. Take a listen to his response.
The formula that's in place in terms of the way that they play Ben, and then they really work hard to not allow him to get out of the pocket. Because with Ben Roethlisberger, broken plays equal big plays. And you see it every single year. He does it to everybody. New England's historically done a really good job of keeping him in the pocket. And the flip side of that is when he is in the pocket, he will hold the ball a long time, which creates tons of opportunities for sacks and turnovers.
Tons of opportunities and sacks. Look, they have injuries with James Conner. Ben Roethlisberger's got bruised ribs. They've lost their last five times they faced the New England Patriots. I do feel like a little bit of this, it's kind of like the Rocky movie. Like, hey, I don't ruin this for you, but Rocco's going to pull this one out. Like, I haven't seen Creed 2, but I'm thinking that Creed pulls it out. Is that crazy? Ramos, have you seen it? Have you broken down Creed 2 yet?
I have not broken down or seen Creed number 2.
Have you seen Creed 1?
Missed Creed 1 as well.
Just missed it, though. Just barely missed it.
I had a screening. I just didn't make it for that one. Yeah.
You had a screen. You had a free ticket to go see it. You didn't go see it.
Yeah. It was a bad night. I think softball or something that was going on.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. My point is that there's some of these movies where we know how they're going, like Jurassic Park. Somehow dinosaurs will get loose. Somehow dinosaurs will kill people. Remarkably, most of the stars of the movie will not be killed. And there'll be some sort of teaser so that there could be a dinosaur movie in the future.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right, let's talk a little NBA, as last night, the Lakers, the Red Hot Lakers, go into Houston, and they got a 50-piece from James Harden. James Harden, of course, some of the officiating called into question, but he has a triple-double, 50 points, 10 rebounds, 11 assists. LeBron James shoots the ball well, with exception of the free throw line, but 29, 5, and 4, not enough, doesn't have enough help around him. And what was like a one-point game becomes a 14-point win for the Rockets. Welcome in Dante Jones, of course, played with LeBron, won an NBA championship, breaks down the NBA. You'll see him on Fox Sports. He joins us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Look, some of it is just James Harden making contested shots, but what about the discrepancy in foul shots, the ability for him to get to the free throw line? What's your take when you watch the Rockets and James Harden get to the foul line so often?
That's just what he does, and that's, he's made a living off being able to draw fouls and live at the free throw line. He creates contact, and refs are looking for the ways that he creates contact, and it's very creative, but everybody can't do it, and he's a specialist at it.
He is. I don't know. I just rewatched the game a couple hours ago, and I was a little bit – look, he had it going, so you keep going to him. I was a little bit surprised at how little they used Chris Paul and Chris Paul's shooting the last couple of games. I know he lit up Dallas, but his shooting hasn't been as good. Has Chris Paul aged right before our eyes?
I think he's just going through one of those spells of just not being himself. I think he has a game that can age, and he's not relying on his quickness or his athleticism. He's relying on his brain. He's so cerebral that he can use a whole lot of his skill set and not be under the rim and not be super fast. So I wouldn't qualify it as age. I just think that he's not in his normal groove right now, and I think they're struggling as a unit to find five people that's going to be on the floor and be effective at the same time.
It's a great point you bring up. That's actually what I said about LeBron, which is people are pointing out LeBron's not getting to the free throw line. I was like, look, he doesn't explode by guys. Like, you can put like a Capella can switch on him, and he has to be more creative in how he uses his body and uses angles. He's become a lights out step back 3-point shooter. He's kind of got that funky little awkward step back that he likes to go to. Do you think he's avoiding the foul line because he's shooting below 60, or do you think it's an inability to get a step like he used to?
I don't think it's a step. I think some of that stuff becomes mental with people when they struggle from the free throw line, and he may be trying not to get fouled and not have to be on the line as much. I know he takes so much contact on a nightly basis that it does tend to wear on him. People look at him like he's Superman, he's superhuman. But yeah, just because he may be able to take 1,000 hits and a normal person can take 600, but it's still that after 1,000, it starts to wear on him and it starts to deteriorate his body. So I think he's trying to find his happy medium between taking some jump shots and not get hit as much.
Dante Jones joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. All right, let's start with the Lakers. How good do you think they'll be at the end of the season?
I think they'll be right in the thick of things, because I think Magic Johnson will try and pull some things off to make them a better basketball team when it comes around that trade deadline. And I think their assets out there to acquire to be able to make them a team that can compete for a championship, especially when you have it's wide open in the West right now. I think Golden State is not at full health, and they haven't played their best basketball yet, and who knows if they'll get back to the Golden State that we know. But guys are intrigued because there's no definite front runner in the West right now that is going to take it over.
Okay, everybody knows that the only guy that they would like to kind of vote off the island would be Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, right? He's got the one-year deal. He's a little bit overpaid. He would be the odd man out.
He has the most friendly contract.
Yeah, no, he does. But like the other team knows that too, so they might not just want to take the contract. They'd be like, look, we want one of the young guys as well. If you have to part ways with one of the young guys, who is it?
You're asking me? My personal opinion? I think
yes.
The guy that can't go is Kuzma. And then right after him is Josh Hart.
I think so. Then that leaves Ingram and Lonzo, And I just don't know what
Ingram
Lonzo.
And Lonzo, and that's not because they're not more. They're more talented than those guys, but those guys fit in the direction that the Lakers are going. If you understand what I'm saying,
I agree. I completely
agree. And those two also would grab you back something that could help you for the future as well. So I think those two together on another team could be better than they are right now. I just don't think that they fit the plan that Lakers are moving towards in the future.
Let's get to Golden State. You mentioned they're not at full health, right? They didn't have Draymond. Even Draymond's not really back, and he hasn't shot the ball maybe in the last calendar year all that well. And they're waiting on DeMarcus Cousins. But I look at that, you know, Iguodala's not right. Sean Livingston is aged. I'm just wondering how different they'll actually be when they do get healthy.
See, those injury bugs, and they've been so lucky over the years to have everyone healthy and to not have to go through this. And now that they're going through it, it just shows you how there are a collection of great talent. They're not individuals. And KD might be the only individual that gets you over the hump in the finals, but they're a collection, and they thrive off each other, whether it be Clay, Steph, and Draymond in the starting unit. But then you have two great players coming in, off the bench, and Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala, and before you had Barbosa, and you had guys that could come in and soak up minutes, and the level of play would not go down. Right now, they don't have that same type of bench. And when those guys are all healthy and playing together, yeah, they're at full strength. But right now, it's hard to piece and get those guys healthy all at the same time. And Sean Livingston is looking like he's dealing with stuff that's trickling over into other stuff, and and getting him fully healthy is going to be tough.
Okay,
and then you have to add in DeMarcus Cousins at some point in time in the season. So,
right,
like, how does this all work out?
Here's that's a great question, Dante. You know this way better than I do, and definitely better than anybody listening to. Dante Jones, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show. You get DeMarcus Cousins, who's an all-star, when healthy. Okay, now look, we have no idea what he's going to look like coming off the Achilles tendon, but let's say he's close to what he was before he got hurt. On the other hand, when they won championships, they've done so starting a big guy, and then they take him out, and then they go small ball. But if you have DeMarcus Cousins, do you go small ball? And if you go with DeMarcus Cousins, now that completely changes you defensively. Now you have two guys in Steph and DeMarcus you're going to try and hide from the perimeter. How do you think they'll play?
Because when they went small ball before, their five-man was their strength. So they could switch on anybody, and they could guard all types of people. When you have DeMarcus now your defense caters. And I've been a proponent of they're a great team because they're a great defensive team. Right. DeMarcus Cousins does not make them a great defensive team. Like, even before KD, everybody says KD's a defender now. No, he joined a great collection of defenders, and it heightened his ability to defend. It made him not stand out. It helped him be looked at as a defender, but it was because of the defense that was there before he even got there. So now that you have two non-defenders, that's going to be tough for them because they switch a lot, and now they're going to have to go to traditional sets of defense of pick-and-roll coverages, and that's something that they don't specialize in. So it's going to change the landscape for them. So we're going to have to see to be continued, I guess.
Yeah, listen, you have a great pulse on all of these guys. There's a story out earlier this week that the Clippers have this almost unhealthy obsession with KD and with Kawhi Leonard. They think they got a shot to get them both. Now, look, it sounds good in the media, and Steve Ballmer being willing to move mountains to get it done. And up until they've gotten blown out the last two games, up until those blowouts, you could say, all right, maybe I could see this being a really good story. They could maybe make the playoffs. In reality, how hard a pitch is it for the Clippers, even with Jerry West and with Lawrence Frank and with Doc Rivers, how hard a pitch is it for the Clippers to get a couple superstars?
I don't think it's a hard one. I think it's L.A., number one. Number two, we're moving into the new arena. You guys get to move into a new generation, be a part of this new underground swelling of what's going to happen in Inglewood. I think they're selling that. They're selling the weather. They're selling the organization. Jerry West is at the helm with Lawrence Frank. And then you have a championship coach in Doc Rivers who are putting together a collection of guys that are going to play hard on a nightly basis and are going to be able to contribute right away. They're selling something that is viable to some people. And I think if you want to be in L.A. and you maybe not want to play with LeBron James, I think it's a viable option. I think it's something to sell over there. You could be a part of something and be a part of the resurgence rather than just adding to a legacy.
We watched the Raptors go in and smack them around. Then they went up and smacked the Warriors around. They did so without Kawhi Leonard. It's hard to get people to buy into the Raptors because LeBron dusting them off in the playoffs, it seemed like every year. But it's a different, feels like a different Raptors team. What do you think about the Raptors so far?
I think the Raptors have found the answer to all their problems, and they have a good collection of leadership, youth, length, athleticism, with or without Kawhi Leonard. Like, with Kawhi, they're great, but without Kawhi, they're still great. They still compete at a high level. They still defend at a high level. They get out and run. They play hard every night, and they're in a position where they really are going to be okay regardless of what Kawhi does. So I think the future is bright for them because they're in a conference where they can compete on a nightly basis and compete for that top slot with or without Kawhi in the future, but definitely this year they have championship aspirations.
KD was he's done like everybody's podcast but mine. Dante Jones joined us in the Doug
Gottlieb Show. Why is that? What did you do to him?
Nothing. I haven't asked him. I like KD a lot, but I mean, it's not like we need to hear more from KD. We've heard him talk maybe almost too much. So he went on this one podcast and he said, look, when people come to his house, he makes them watch Jordan videos, watch Kobe videos, because people don't understand how Kyrie put Kobe and MJ as like the greatest artists. He mentioned Beethoven and Mozart. Read into that for me. He doesn't mention LeBron, and he does mention those three. Read into that for me. What do you think he means by it?
I respect him for not mentioning LeBron because that shows you that he is a competitor and that he's looking at him as his equal rather than somebody he's trying to emulate. I think he thinks he's trying to come for that top spot as the greatest basketball player in the world, and he should be trying to come for it. But he spoke of it as, like, Kobe and MJ, I see what you mean, because those guys were artists with the basketball on both ends of the floor. They had a skill set, and they honed it, and they worked, like, maniacally on what they did, and he's trying to put some of those things in his game. Kyrie with his finishing and his ability to score and make tough shots and make big shots. Like, those guys are all specialists at what they do on the scoring end of the floor. So I can understand that, but I appreciate him not putting LeBron in it. No shade to LeBron, but it's just the competitive nature that he has, that he wants to come for that top spot because he, by most, he's viewed as the second best player in the world, which is an awesome thing to be, but he ultimately wants to be the best.
Yeah, no question. I also think that there's a little bit of, and I've heard this from some NBA guys, I haven't heard you say this, but a little bit of like, hey, LeBron doesn't have that much game. Like, he's got good vision, but he also is a power forward in a league without power forwards and bigs in the lane. And he can shoot and he can handle, but not like those guys in terms of refined skill, that the league and the style of play and the style that LeBron plays kind of all fits, and it's allowed him to be an explosive scorer, even though he doesn't have maybe the quote-unquote game or skill of those other three.
I would argue you in another direction, because I think LeBron is like Kobe and MJ. There was no fluff to their games. It was effective moves to get it done. MJ, early in his career, had a little bit of a handle, but he got to the point where it was one dribble, two dribble pull-ups, or I'm going to get to the basket and dunk on you, fadeaways. But it was basic basketball fundamentals. You just can't stop me. And LeBron is in that. Like, he's 6'9", 270, a force flying at you on the break. Now he's shooting the ball exceptionally well from three. And, like, I don't need to do all those other things to get by you. I can get by you with one dribble and do what I'm supposed to rather than try and put on a show and try to impress you with skills that I don't have. I just have the effective basketball skills to get it done and dominate. And I think him, MJ, and Kobe all were the same.
Right. Well, I mean, Kobe with the use of angles and pivot feet and fadeaways.
He had to because he didn't have the body that LeBron did. So,
no question.
Like,
but
you have to create those things at that point in time. But the fadeaway, LeBron has a fadeaway too. Like, the one-leg fadeaways that he's been shooting over the past 2 years, that's something he has just to stay away from contact because his body breaks down. Because people think he's superhuman, but he's not.
Yeah, great stuff. Dante, awesome catching up with you. Appreciate your insight.
My man.
Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate you.